the bond is intended to cover this period where it's acted on as credit. We're acting as creditors to the dealers.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair. I have a quick one. Most everything was asked, but I mean, you refer to two gasoline dealers, probably the worst of the cases. How many are there?
Chairman Brown, Representative Beyer, there's about 180 licensed dealers in Oregon right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. One more question. The Indian tribes that have gasoline stations in operation, do they collect the road tax for the state of Oregon?
Chairman Brown, generally, yes. There are several tribes in Oregon that have purchased truck stops, and the way the gasoline tax law works, they are not licensed with us, and so when they buy the fuel in Oregon, the person that's selling them the fuel is responsible for the tax. We do have one tribe, the Umatilla tribes, in Pendleton area that purchased a truck stop up there, and we worked with them for the last couple of years, and just last October we entered into an agreement with them. They were bringing their fuel in from Washington, so it didn't have the Oregon tax attached. It had Washington tax. So when they brought it in, Oregon wasn't getting any tax. We worked with them for 2 years, and we reached an agreement, and they're now remitting Oregon tax on a monthly basis to us. And then in exchange, we have our agreement calls for us to refund taxes to those tribal members that use the fuel on the reservation.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. Paul, would you like to come forward, please?
I asked the question earlier, I guess.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I'm here representing the Oregon Petroleum Marketers Association, as opposed to other things that come in barrels. with me today is Cliff Olson, who is with the Mark Nelson Oil Company here in Salem. It is not Mark Nelson, the lobbyist. It is Mark Nelson, the oil company person. Different company. We are here in support of the bills, all three of them that you see before you, brought to you by ODOT. And our main thrust of our testimony, we are here to answer questions and also to praise ODOT. And I know that's a little strange for some of you, but it's so often that agencies get bashed around this place that we actually decided to come to you and tell you about the process used in coming to putting these bills together. ODOT came to us early and said, we have a problem. We'd like to increase the bond, for example, in this one. We met with them, we sat, we went through the process, and we said, why should we punish the little guy who's paying right now? Everything's on time. Let's figure out a process to go after the one who is causing the problem. And they did. We worked with them. We came up with this bill. We like it. You'll see the same thing with 2222 and 2223. And I put myself down to testify on those, and I won't come up unless you have some questions. But the testimony applies to all three. They took the time to actually come to us, figure out what industry could work with, and then they came to you with that industry solution. So the bills are good. We really appreciate working with them, and we appreciate your support of it. Cliff will be happy to answer any questions on the actual operation of paying the tax, getting the gas, things like that. I'll provide color commentary if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I'm trying to figure out what my question is, but I'm thinking in terms of the cases that they talk about here where they had this large debt, and it wasn't really over an extremely long period of time, and prior to that they had a very good record of payment. So, and then they just disappear. So I'm wondering if there's might be still a little bit of a problem. I mean, I don't want to extend this. I'm just wondering if this is going to catch what we need it to catch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, you are one step ahead of everybody, because the next bill you're coming to
okay.
deals with immediate suspension. of a license, which gives ODOT a tool to work with those who start showing some signs of problems. So you are ahead of the curve. If you will wait patiently for the next bill, you will be on the curve.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Thank you.
Thank you
for coming this morning. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on 2211? None? I'll close the public hearing, and I'll open the work session on House Bill 2211. Motion maker.
Yeah, I'll make a motion. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2221 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Beyer moves House Bill... Did I go to the right one then? 2211?
Did I say 21?
Yeah. Okay. Representative Beyer moves House Bill 2211 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, Ryan, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Dinkfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. motion carries, and close the work session, and we need... And need a carrier. No volunteer.
Carrier.
Representative Beyer will need the carrier on the bill. Thank you. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2222. That's four of a kind. And,
I'll call your man and raise your man.
And could we have David Tyler and Quentin Hess again, please? No, that would be an easy way to do this. Get them all along, huh? Mm-hmm. David, go ahead again. I see, Janet, will you explain the bill to us here?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2222 would allow the Department of Transportation to immediately suspend the license of a motor vehicle fuel dealer who fails to comply with fuel tax laws. The dealer would be able to contest the suspension at a hearing. The bill also specifies notice requirements to the dealer and to other dealers that the suspended dealer's authority to buy tax-deferred fuel is suspended. And then it provides that if a dealer, after such notification, sells to the suspended dealer, the selling dealer is liable for the tax owed. It provides also provides for reinstatement of the license upon compliance by the offending dealer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Jen. David?
Good morning. For the record, Chair Brown, Vice Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Mabry, and committee. My name's Dave Tyler. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for ODOT. We're here to request your support of House Bill 2222. It does help provide an additional tool to address the issues related to delinquent taxes, and I'll turn to Mr. Hess to explain the details.
Chairman Brown, Vice Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Mabry. My name is Quentin Hess. I'm the Fuels Tax Manager for ODOT. This bill kind of tags on to the previous one. What this allows us to do is to immediately suspend a dealer's license if we see problems that we think would endanger the state's ability to get the tax. Currently, our only tool is to revoke a license. Statute gives us authority to revoke a dealer's license, but only after we have issued them a 10-day notice. We have to give them, by statute, 10 days of notice to cure the deficiency, and then we can revoke the license. The suspension will allow us to do that immediately, and basically what we're doing there is we're saving the state 10 to 12 days of additional taxes that could be incurred during this revocation period. This bill, the suspension,
really increases our flexibility here. We, at this point, we don't have any real choice. When a dealer gets in trouble, we don't know if it's a temporary thing or if it's going to be a permanent thing, but we do know that the tax dollars are at risk. So to be on the safe side, we generally, as soon as we have a late payment, we issue a 10-day notice of revocation and give them that period of time to cure the deficiency. The additional flexibility here would allow us to work with the dealers if we find out that maybe it is a temporary thing and they just need a little bit of time. We can suspend the license. What that does is it stops the bleeding of the tax. It immediately, from that point, they have to start paying their tax to the supplier. So whatever they owe us is not going to get any bigger at that time. And then when and if they cure the deficiency, we can reinstate them. They don't have to go through a reapplication process, which is the current procedure now. No provision for reinstatement in our law. It's just if you're revoked, you have to reapply. This would just allow us to administratively reinstate them, notify the other dealers in Oregon that they're back in good standing, and they can go about their business. We also retain our right to revoke the license if, for some reason, they're unwilling or unable to solve the problem. So we think, in summary, that this is a good thing for ODOT and also a good thing for the industry. It just increases the flexibility that we have in working with problem accounts. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Greenman.
If you had both 2211 and 2222 in force, I don't see that there's a link between the two. I don't see that suspension would give you the opportunity to automatically trigger the 2211 action. Would this bill be better to have? I guess there's a timing issue, but you would want the ability to increase the bond as a result of that suspension, seemed to me.
Chairman Brown, Representative Greenlick, they really solve two different problems. The bond covers future tax payments that are owed the state. And that it's an insurance policy for the state. It says if everything's going along fine and we don't see any trouble, but we've got this, well, actually, in the case of the bill before me, we would have had problems and they would have been at $1 million, but it solves a future cash flow problem. This bill allows us to immediately stop the bleeding on past taxes. Pretty much we can stop it at this point in time, so we have protection for what they've already incurred and we have protection for what is going forward. Protection behind the bond protects what's already due. The suspension keeps it from getting any bigger.
Let me follow up, sir. Well, I understand the purpose of this one, but when you have to suspend somebody, that's evidence that you might have a problem in the future. And what I don't see is the connection between a suspension and one of the results of the suspension would be to increase the bond. I'm not certain you have the authority under 2211, as we've enacted that, to use that as one of the mechanisms when you release the suspension.
Chairman Brown, Representative Greenlick, that's true. House Bill 2211 has specific items in there that would trigger the higher bond, and they would have to have been late three times in the last 24 months. They would have to meet those requirements. I don't see it as a problem, though, from where I sit.
Representative Gilman. I want to be sure, the way I understand this, when you suspend the license, really all we're doing is saying the tax has to be paid by the distributor on up the line, or the supplier on up the line. It doesn't preclude them from doing business. They still can continue to do business.
Chairman Brown, Representative Gilman, yes, you're absolutely correct. It simply requires that whoever sells them the fuel is responsible for the tax, And while it can present cash flow problems to the business because they're suddenly paying 24 cents more a gallon, it doesn't theoretically put them out of business.
One more.
Follow up.
How do we get notification to that supplier of the dealer that they don't have a license?
Chairman Brown, Representative Gilman, what the bill calls for, the dealer that would be suspended will get a certified letter notifying them of the suspension. And then at the same time, we will notify all other dealers in Oregon of the suspension. So if that dealer should go to another dealer and say, I'm licensed, I want to buy fuel, these other dealers will know that that license has been suspended, and that if they sell to them, they have to collect the tax at that time.
Representative Greenman.
That notification is by regular mail. And the regular mail is not very a very powerful tool. You may want that to be regular mail or other means, such as electronic and fax and a variety of other things. It would seem to me that would be a more efficient way to do it. And we might want to amend that to give broader scope to that notification.
Chairman Brown, Representative Greenlit, that's exactly what Mr. Doherty is going to tell you when he comes up here in a few minutes. What we do in practice, when we revoke a dealer, but we have their tax reports, and we know who is selling them the fuel. We call them up, we call up their suppliers, and we tell them that this license has been revoked at this point in time, and all future sales they need to collect the tax on. We do that by telephone, and then we send out, we've been sending out just regular mail to their other dealers in Oregon, and we haven't had a problem. But I see exactly what you're talking about, and I told Mr. Doherty that we would be more than happy to go with an amendment that would require us to fax, email, certify mail, whatever, to these other 180 dealers, because we don't want anybody to be left holding the bag.
Thank you.
I'll propose an amendment.
Thank you.
Chair Brown, if I might, Representative Greenlit, we would be fine with that. To prepare 180 certified letters poses an additional workload on the staff in the fuels tax group. This is not a big operation, as you can surmise from a biennial budget of about $2.1 million. It's a good communication tool. If there's a way, perhaps we could work with industry and send out perhaps email notifications to all of the suppliers. In today's age, most of these people might have computers, and we could maintain an address listing to shoot those out. But to sit and prepare 180 certified mail return receipt requests with a very small support staff, we might face some additional time delays in getting those things out in the mail. That would be my only reservation.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Could we have Brian Doherty and Paul Romaine? You want to make... Okay, Paul's waving me off. Brian?
Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. I want to compliment you, Chair Brown, on having some very astute people wide awake this morning. And I am a partner in the law firm of Miller Nash, and I also represent today the Western States Petroleum Association, which is an association of the producers, refiners, and marketers of oil, some of which you wouldn't have heard of, such as Santa Fe Energy, but most of which you would hear of that are marketing in Oregon, such as Chevron Texaco, Shell, BP, Tosco, which runs the Union 76 brand, ExxonMobil, Tesoro, Alaska, those types of branded marketers. We are supportive of all three bills that ODOT has brought before you today. Our concern, as Representative Gilman and Representative Greenlit have pointed out, is the notification procedure, because we are the distributor that is going to be, has been selling the gas, X tax, as they call it, without tax, to these other licensed fuel dealers. Just briefly, about 85% of Oregon's fuel comes in through the Olympic pipeline from the Puget Sound refineries. They come to terminals in Portland, what we call Willbridge, up in northwest Portland. There then is a routing. There's another pipeline down to Eugene. There's barging up to eastern Oregon. But a lot of the fuel dealers, the other fuel dealers, such as Mr. Romaine represents, Mark Nelson Oil Company, will bring their trucks to a terminal and pull that fuel without paying tax because they have that fuel dealer certificate. So we have done that. Let's assume that they are late payment and they get suspended. Chevron Texaco, let's take an example, will get a letter. We're not sure where that letter goes in Chevron. Where is it going to go to? How long will it take before it gets to the right person to put on the computer screen or to do something at the terminal that says this person can no longer take it without tax? And the penalty is that if we sell to them after we've received notice somewhere within that organization, we pay the tax. And we've already probably, the product's already gone out in the trucks, and we've lost the ability to capture it, so we become the collector. We understand that we need to participate in this program. We want to. But right now, a regular mail letter somewhere, it causes us great concern. We do think there's a way to work with the agency. Our tax folks from my groups, we're going to talk with Mr. Hess and Mr. Tyler, determine if there isn't a better notification procedure that gives us the opportunity to make sure the right person who can make sure that that account is labeled as a suspended license gets that notification. And then we're comfortable that once we have it in the right hands, that we can do that. And I think we can work on some language, and we're quite willing to do so. But that is our primary concern. I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have any.
And so, Brian, what you're suggesting is that you will work together with ODOT and the Revenue Department and draft an amendment to this so it'll clean up your concerns.
Chair Brown, yes, we would be happy to do that.
Thank you. Is there any other questions? Representative Greenland.
Yeah, thank you, sir. When you work that out, I think you would need to work it out so that there was more flexibility rather than less flexibility in this. And it would seem to me the notion that you do this by phone, email, fax, other means, maybe as described in a rule, would seem to me the appropriate way of dealing with this. So if you are going to work out an amendment to propose to us, would you consider the question of both making sure your dealers are protected, but that there's a variety of ways of doing that rather than a less flexible way of doing it?
Chair Brown, Representative Greenlick, I believe that's exactly what we will try to do. The key is you have 180 of these dealer licenses. ODOT has the ability to know who that dealer that is being suspended has been buying in the past from, probably only up to about two to maybe three at most where he would be buying it. That's easy to notify those three, but you now have to notify all the others because the possibility is that suspended dealer might understand, they'll know right away, and they may go to someone else. So it's the notification of 180 people that is concerning, that everybody needs to know. And that, hopefully we can do that in a method that has flexibility but also has ODOT knowing exactly where they should go and how they should go with each dealer. And I think each dealer could provide that information to them.
Yeah, it would seem to me that could be dealt with by rule rather than by statute. And it would seem to me the statute should have the most flexibility in it, with the rule creating, say, a model of the requirement for each distributor to have a notification contact that ODOT uses. I mean, I think there could be a variety of ways to handle it by rule, but it seemed to me the statute ought to provide the flexibility and the rule ought to provide the specificity on how to do it.
Chair Brown, Representative Greenlick, I agree. I guess what I'm concerned about is the language now says they notify us by regular mail.
No, I wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, Brian? Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
And I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2222, and we'll await some amendments before we take it to work session. And what's the next one? Open a public hearing on House Bill 2223. And please, Janet, give us an explanation of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2223 is the third in the trio of dealer and fuel seller bills. It requires a person who exports fuel, motor vehicle fuel, to another state or country to hold a fuel dealer license or its equivalent issued by that state or other jurisdiction. Exporters of fuel are not required to pay the state fuel tax on the exported fuel. House Bill 2223 would maintain that policy but require the exporter to have a dealer's license in the other jurisdiction.
Sure.
This is intended to prevent evasion of the state tax and to provide protection to neighboring jurisdictions as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. David and Quentin again. Seems like there could have been an easy way to do this so you guys wouldn't have to be marching back and forth. We're new to the program.
That's okay. Chair Brown, my apologies. Chair Brown, Vice Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Mabry, and committee. For the record, Dave Tyler, Chief Financial Officer for ODOT. This is another one of those somewhat technical bills to help close some loopholes and allow us to work more efficiently with our neighboring states who already have similar requirements in place. Ms. Adkins did a very good job of summarizing the implications of the bill. It will help us curb evasion and make sure that one of the states gets the correct amount of tax through the process. And with that, I'll turn to Mr. Hess again, and perhaps that would be enough, and we could respond to your questions.
Chair Brown, Vice Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Mabry. Again, my name is Quentin Hess, Fuels Tax Manager for ODOT. It has been pretty well summarized. What this bill, and I'll just try to do it again real quickly, what this bill does is it allows us to deny an export exemption, a deduction from the tax, basically, that's owed to Oregon for fuel that is exported out of the state. So if it's not burned in Oregon, we don't get the tax. Wherever the fuel is burned, that's the state where the tax should be due. What we currently have, all states have this kind of a provision in their law. What Idaho and Washington have is an additional provision. They say in order for this dealer to claim that exemption from the Washington tax or the Idaho tax for fuel going out into Oregon, they have to be licensed in Oregon. And having them licensed in Oregon means we know who they are, we have a bond to cover them, cover the tax liability. We're as protected as we can get. And what we don't have in Oregon is this authority right now to require this going the other way, reciprocal arrangement. And Washington has actually cautioned us and threatened kind of to pull this if this requirement, if we don't reciprocate and require our licensees that export to be licensed in Washington. So we want to protect the revenues of Oregon by having them maintain their requirement that these exports be only by people licensed in Oregon. On the other hand, we want to reciprocate and protect their revenues as well. And that's pretty much what the bill does.
Thank you. Any questions? Must have done a great job. There's any questions?
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair, I've got all these licenses flying around. How much do these licenses cost generally?
Chairman Brown, Representative Gilman, they're free.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Good price. That's the right price. Representative's honor.
Yeah, weird one. Can say you put some gas in the people's tanks, can they pump it out and take it to another state and avoid some taxes, or is that?
Chairman Brown, Representative's honor. Not really, because if you pump that, if you fill up your car and then you decide to pump it out, you've paid the tax. You've paid 24 cents a gallon to the state of Oregon.
No, but I'm sorry. Follow up. Say it's put in at the service station. No tax has been paid yet, right? On that until it goes into that car. I mean, oh.
It would be paid at that point once it goes into the ground at the service station.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Jenna.
Mr. Chair, thanks. I have a question about the deleted language in Section 1 of the bill. At the beginning of Section 1 and at the end of Section 1, it doesn't seem to be picked up anyplace else. Is that just unnecessary or?
You're looking at the 500 gallons or less?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that we looked at that and I checked with the staff that have been around for 25 years and said, has this ever come up? And the answer was no. And we talked to our counsel at Justice and we talked to Legislative Council, and the decision was just to clean up the statute by taking that out. It just never applied.
Thank you. Raise any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
Always it off to. Is there anyone else wants to testify? None. I'll close the public hearing and open the work session.
Mr. Chair, I move 22-23 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gilman moves 22-23 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, Ryan, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Gilman.
Yes.
Representative Greenwood.
Yes.
Representative Mabry.
Yes.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Byers.
Yes.
Representative Dingfeld.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Close the work session. We need a carrier to. Representative Zahner slowly raises his hand. Thank you. Janet, is there any anything about upcoming meetings we need to?
No, Mr. Chair. The meeting on Monday is at 8:30, regular time. We should have gotten a revised agenda. If you're leaving early today or if your staff is leaving early, make sure they get the revised agenda. We added one bill this morning to the agenda for Monday.
Is that the email that went out yesterday?
No, it was not until this morning.
What's on your desk
on Monday again? I'm sorry.
The one on the desk.
Regular 8:30 meeting on Monday.
Okay, thank you. As any other session, we are adjourned. There's no objection.